My name is Scott Harris. Welcome to the Dairy Dive. Today we're going to talk about letting cows be cows. What does that mean? Well, stick around and you'll find out. Buckle up because we're diving deep.
First of all, we hope we can try to educate you so you learn just a little bit.
My whole life's been dairy farming. Some days you wonder why you ever milk cows.
It's kind of just in the blood around here. I don't know what it is, but we like livestock.
Buckle up. The Dairy Dive starts now.
So today I got the opportunity to sit down with Jason Reed with IBA Inc. And you'll be able to tell Jason is very passionate about what he does. And we talked a lot about cow comfort and did a comparison between two different dairies of different sizes and some of the practices that they use and how that affects the cow and how stress and just the high vacuum settings and things like that can really have a negative effect on overall production and make sure we're looking at ROI and a lot of different factors that go in. So hope you will stay tuned to this and really plug in as we visit with Jason a little bit about this topic and kind of dive off into a few different areas as well. So with that, we're going to jump in here with Jason Reed from IBA Inc. So at this time, I'd like to bring in our guest, Jason Reed. And Jason and I had a little technical difficulty this morning, but we got it worked out. And we are excited that Jason is with us today and talking about a topic that I get pretty passionate about. So, but before we dive in there, Jason, welcome. Why don't you tell us kind of who you are, where you're located, and what IBA Inc. is?
Yeah, so IBA is a dairy supply company. We sell just about anything you would need on a dairy farm. Our bread and butter is liners and dip, teat dip, and milking inflations. I live in Wisconsin, and they call me a consultant, so that means I do a lot of everything.
Yeah, consultant just means they can do whatever they want, right? They can make you do whatever they say, right?
Isn't that what consultant? Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Give me your opinion, and if you're wrong, we'll tell you to go away. If you're right, we'll tell you to stay. So
There you go. Where are you located at in Wisconsin, Jason?
I live near Walworth, Wisconsin, southern Wisconsin.
Okay. All right. Yeah, we have a good familiarity with Wisconsin and been up there quite a bit. Obviously, go to World Dairy Expo every year. But also just, you know, a lot of business in that geography for us over time. But really appreciate you taking the time. I came across Jason's article that he had in Progressive Dairy. If you're a regular listener of the Dairy Dive podcast, you know we use Progressive and hoard some to articles quite a bit as content for these podcasts, and really enjoyed this article. And we were just talking offline before we started about, you know, some of the specific things there in there that I really liked, but and we'll hit on those today. But you talk in the article, one of my favorite things is you talk about what statement you make is that we sometimes have left the cowness of the cow. I love that statement. What is that? What do you mean by that? That we've left the cowness of the cow?
Yeah, the biggest challenge I have is keeping things concise. But so, milk production is our bread and butter, right? In the industry, we're selling hundredweights of milk to be profitable, right? And we've got components and different things involved in there. And I think we've missed, the focus on, you know, that production unit, you could say. What does a cow need? If she's a 150-pound cow, what does she need in her life to express all that genetic potential? And for us to harvest that at the end, right? So I was just at that dairy show over in Sioux Falls yesterday, and that's a more of a larger dairy show. And there's so much emphasis on production, bigger, better, faster, that sort of thing, which is the trajectory of most businesses, right, in the modern industrialized world. But within that structure, we do tend to lose the fact of these cows were created a certain way. There are certain environmental factors and nutritional factors and environmental factors that will help them either reach their full genetic potential or not. And with this push towards expansion and efficiencies, I just see a lot of that getting missed. So we can break that down more detailed too if you'd like, but absolutely. In general, that's what I see.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I can just tell you, you know, from my side of the equation, I get the opportunity to work with probably like yourself. I work with 10,000 cow dairies. I work with 100 cow dairies. And I can tell you that a good dairy manager, I've seen really good dairy managers of every shape and size when it comes down to it. But the good ones really do make sure and tend to look out for things like cow comfort and letting the cow be a cow. And, you know, specifically, right. you do a really good job in this article of you compare two dairies. One is a 4,200 plus cow dairy, double 50 parallel, and then one is a 3,200 cow dairy, double 50 parallel, milking three times. And so, you know, when we talk about kind of comparing these two, what were some of the key differences of how they operated? Before we get into results, let's talk about what were some of the key differences, you know, as far as human pressure and just the different aspects that kind of separated these two dairies from each other.
Yeah, you bet. Just in my mind, I'm thinking of that, the higher production dairy with fewer cows. That dairy is located in Wisconsin, and you know, we'll leave everything anonymous, but the thing that stands out in that facility is, for one thing, and this is countercultural in our industry right now, is they're not afraid of having enough labor on staff. So if you walk in that parlor today, it's a double 50, they would have six people in the pit that you would see that. And then they would have another person doing other things, especially for like a heifer pen. On that dairy, they don't go in the pens, the holding pens for the cows. We've trained them all to move with a crowd gate. But with the heifers, they need some assistance. But that would be the first thing you'd notice on that dairy is if this is your world and you walk into a parlor, you're expecting to see, you know, one person per 10 cows, or maybe up to 13 cows I see in some cases. So that would be a big difference. They're not afraid of labor, but you've got to think immediately when you think that, everyone gets scared. Oh, I've got to cut my labor. And that's true. You don't want to pay more than you need. But if you look at the results they're getting by having a sufficient number of people on that dairy, it's higher quality milk, fewer cases of mastitis. We have excellent 2-minute milk rate flows. So we have better teat end health because those animals are exposed to less vacuum. And the healthier that animal stays, the more lactations we're going to get out of that animal, right? So, and if you walk in that parlor, if you walked in there this morning, they're milking right now, Central Time, you would actually feel calm when you walked into that parlor. And you know, if you walk into some parlors, you don't have that sense, right? Absolutely. You have a sense of panic almost in some cases, right? So from my end, you know, I'm often charged with, Jason, we need more cows per hour. We need all the milk we can get. We need the employees to do the prep routine correctly. Okay, now go do that for me.
Right? Yeah, so, and that's it. Just all that, Jason. Yeah, right. If you could just do that, right, that would be great. Yeah.
Just go do that, right? So a lot of my work is actually turned into training the managers and the owners to think in this way. And they're the secret sauce. I'm not the secret sauce. I'm more of a coach in that capacity. So when I go into dairies like that, I'm already working with forward-thinking people. And so the point I want to make with that smoother, calmer dairy with higher quality milk, more lactations out of their animals, lactations that are producing higher quality milk, teat ends that are staying healthy, so you're keeping a lower SEC. They're accomplishing that with a little bit more labor. But if you want to just throw rough numbers around and say one milking employee, you're going to pay them about $40,000 a year salary or hourly. It's going to come into somewhere around $40,000. And then you're going to give the communists in Washington $20,000, or the federal government's going to get about $20,000, right?
Yep.
So $60,000 a head is a good rough number for a milking employee. All you got to do is look at your SEC bonus that you're missing, because you may have a higher SEC, maybe you're not getting all of your bonus. maybe you're not getting all of your pounds. And then if you want to assign a dollar figure to a mastitis case, just a simple round trip to the hospital is somewhere in the range of $500 a head. So we're throwing around a lot of numbers here, but if you're at home listening to this podcast, you can write these things down and you can just simply do those numbers. So let's say you're missing 10 or 20 cents on your SEC bonus. Let's just say you're missing maybe 5 pounds of harvest because of poor procedure, poor letdowns, early detaches, those sort of things. And then let's just look at your average, your percentage of mastitis cows. So there's some easy numbers for you. If you could eliminate or greatly reduce all of those factors into a positive place, you will crush your labor cost that you added. So hopefully that's clear, but that's what I'm saying is let's not just throw money around. I'm saying let's look at the ROI of running these parlors and rotary parlors too in a calm way.
Yeah.
And then we can get into why that's so important for the cow. But if you look at that scenario, you walk in that parlor, yes, they have a little higher labor cost than the neighbor that has a double 50 with 3,200 cows. But then let's look at their black, you know, where are they in the black? And they're making more money while spending a little bit more. It's just ROI stuff, you know. It's just a little bit of a paradigm shift with what is labor for, right? It's to get the job done, but we've almost missed the point of getting the job done correctly.
Right. It's the right kind of labor, not just more
exactly.
People per se. Because I think the part that one of the biggest parts that intrigued me the most was when you were talking about this differences between these two dairies, and you specifically mentioned you just said it. It was calmer at the 3,200 cow, higher production, milk production per cow, versus the other one. And you hit on this, but maybe you can go into it more. But I thought it was really interesting how much quicker the milk flow was occurring in that higher production, lower number dairy versus the higher end. Does all of that pretty much relate back to stress, Jason, or do you know?
Yeah, this is fun because I'll get 100 calls after this with people picking me apart. There's a lot of opinions in this industry, but here's the physiological reality. When those animals are calm, and gals in the dairy industry always understand this perfectly if they've had kids, it's just that is the physiological reality. When those animals have what they need, that milk's going to come sooner, right? And what's one of the number one enemies of the cow or the longevity of the cow in the milking parlor? It's vacuum. It's exposure to vacuum, right?
Yep.
So we need vacuum to harvest the milk, but we want to reduce that time with vacuum as much as we can. So how do we do that? Well, for one thing, you can shorten up your duration. So you can make those wet settings where they're very comfortable. But the major, major thing is, because not everyone has a new system where they can really tune in their detach settings, but the best thing you can do is let that animal be who God made her to be. So if you want that milk to show up right away, that animal has to be calm. She has to be willing to do that. So that's the major difference in a calm environment versus an environment that's just push, push, push. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. No, 100% does. And if I remember correctly, the two dairies, the scenario B, which was the 3,200 cows versus 4,200, they actually have more employees in the pit than what the 4,200 cow. But they I would assume, safe to assume, everyone has like a specific job and they make sure and they do their job well. So you're making sure that you're getting the you know, everything applied correctly, cleaning correctly, all this done. Or was it more of a everybody did everything kind of situation as far as the individuals in the pit?
Yeah, we can say this for listeners that may not be extremely familiar with, you know, what a standard milking parlor, how it's running. But we, you know, in a standard milking parlor, you have a sequencing routine of prepping these cows, right? And that's where I say in a double 50, on average, each person in there is going to have 10 cows to themselves, roughly. I've seen guys that are pushing that down to 12, 13 cows a person. But So they're going to sequence those 10 cows in their prep routine, right? And every dairy's got a little different prep sequence or prep routine. But basically that's going to entail, we need to disinfect the cow, we need to stimulate the cow, and we need to make sure those teats are dry when we attach a machine. So what we need are clean teats, dry teats, and well-stimulated teats, right? That's what we're attaching a machine to. Supposedly, that's what we're after.
Right.
And that's where I drew the juxtaposition in that article, is if you are not doing that, you're causing problems. So you may look really impressive to the neighbor that you're milking more cows, but the neighbor may be doing a better job by taking a different approach. So the better we can do that prep routine and disinfect the cow, stimulate the cow, and help her feel comfortable where she is, the milk's gonna show up right away, right? And you can see this every day. You walk into a milking parlor, you watch those guys attach the machines, if you see claws that are empty on attachment, that's a problem. What you want to see is milk flow immediately when that machine goes on. And I would go so far as to say you do not want to see an empty machine ever on a cow. My smart aleck remark regarding that is, I will tell people that milking machine, that cluster, has no right to be on a cow unless there is milk flow. That's at the front of the duration, and that is at the back of the duration.
Right.
That means we're not pulling the eyeballs of that cow through. That's not when we pull the machine, when they show up in the milking claw. We actually want milk flow when that unit comes off. And that's a bigger topic too. We can touch on that more if you want, but.
Yeah, go ahead and hit on that a little bit more too.
Yeah, and you can edit this down to what you need, but. So this is, again, this is not specific to dairy. This would be any industry. And I was in a different industry prior to this. I've had two really good adult careers. And whatever industry you're in, the way you're going to go forward is if you can challenge some of the paradigms that you're swimming in, right? So that's what I've done in the dairy industry, is I look at this and I say, okay, these guys are making money on hundredweights of milk, along with components, right? Quality milk along with components in there. So then I just analyze, okay, what cost do they have into making these 100 pounds of milk? And let's just say I'm working with a guy that's got really nice, I don't know, 150 pound cows. He's got 105 pound, like that dairy in Wisconsin. They've got 105 pound herd average, right? That's a lot of milk. If I went in there and said, I think you could milk more cows, like, because I can make them turn that parlor faster, and they may get impressed. Hey, we're milking more cows in the same amount of time. But what's that going to do over the span of those animals' potential production life, right? A couple of years ago, we were throwing around this number that the average lactation where an animal is going to slaughter is 2.5 lactations in the United States.
Wow.
Because if you want to think about that, that's a pretty dysfunctional number.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was that low.
And I'm not quoting that specifically right now, but 4 or 5 years ago, before a lot of the world events were going on, that was a real average number. Just think about that. And then think of, if you know these numbers, look at your animals, look at the age of lactations you have in your herd, and look at where you're beginning to be profitable. And you're going to find almost 100% of people are going to say, we're not even profitable until after the end of the second lactation. Yeah, we're killing these animals on average at 2.5 lactations. So if you want to start analyzing your profitability and your business model, just challenge some of these things and look at them, and then look at your specific operation and say, what's actually going to move the needle? Are we making money on components? Are we making money on SCC? Are we making money purely on pounds? Just look at those things. And then you can make decisions for yourself, or talk to someone like me that does this for a living, you know, and we can just guide you through those. But
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So
I'm glad we kind of went there, because it makes a lot of sense to me that I guess from what I've seen, myself, and I am, you know, everybody who listens to the show regularly knows I'm not a dairyman, but I work with a lot of them and have spent a lot of time on them. And I think just the idea that you know, you got to know your goals and you got to know what's going to make sense. I don't know if that's still the number or not, the 2.5, but even if it's slightly more than that, it's still scary. Yeah.
Exactly.
And we're, I mean, how much are we costing ourselves in the long big picture here? Did mention, I didn't know how big of a factor it was, but you did mention a difference between the two was that your 3,200 cow dairy, so scenario B, was not human pressure as far as getting the cows into the parlor versus the other one was human pressure. How big of a factor do you think that is, or can that really even be measured, or do you just think it's one of the many factors that's going into this?
It's definitely a factor. I'll say this. You can use correct human pressure on animals, on cattle. There's absolutely no problem with that. But what you run into in the dairy industry is when we allow men and women to get into the holding pen and push cows themselves, those employees are under a lot of pressure. And so they are just naturally going to give that pressure to the cows. The cows are going to feel that energy from those employees. And there are those, I meet them all the time, that actually can do a pretty good job of it. But your average milking employee is under a lot of pressure. And most of them are trying to do a good job. So what do they think? They think we got to move these cows quick. We got to get through the cows, right? So God bless them. They're trying. But we need to correct that understanding that when you stress that animal, you are immediately negatively affecting the milking process. So one of the things I teach is the process of milking actually begins in the freestall barn or out in your dry lots, wherever you are in the United States, wherever your cows eat and rest. That's where the milking process begins, because if we are stressing them at that state, what they're learning is, oh, I just got stressed. Now I have to go get milked. So she's learning that the milking process is actually stressful, right?
Yeah.
If you have time and if you have, you know, good leadership skills and good managers, you can train your help to manually move cows correctly. The reason I put that in there in that article with the crowd gate is that crowd gate's going to operate the same every time. The bell on that crowd gate is going to sound the same 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Consistency.
And the cows love that, right? So the crowd gate's not the magic bullet. What we're trying to do is give those cows the same thing 24/7, 365, right? And then the cow has the ability to relax.
That's awesome. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, just thinking right off the time at top of my head, probably one of the most successful dairies that I work with uses this exact scenario. They have a crowd gate, push gate, and they've had it for, I don't know, a lot of years. I don't know how long, but and it does seem to be very common, because I think we do forget how much the animals respond to us. And you're stressful. You're stressed. Your employees are stressed. They're
100%.
You know, they're overworked or feel they are, and just hot, they're cold, they're what, I mean, you know, it's miserable. You're having to do this twice a day, you know, and you're just miserable. And so when it really all comes down to it, what you have in the article here, Jason, is that basically 105 pounds per cow at 3,200 cows for scenario B, talking about $336,000 versus 85 pounds on 4,200 cows, just about $357,000. So 1,000 more cows, but only 21,000 more pounds, or not pounds, not dollars, sorry. 21,000 more pounds, but 1,000 more cows. How much cost is 1,000 more cows, right? That's the question. How much more feed, you know, antibiotics, I mean, all kinds of stuff, right?
The whole thing. Yeah. And this goes back to my point of actually analyzing your specific business. Right, and I think we're past the stage in the industry of guys that are not looking at their dairy farm as a business. I mean, the people that are still doing this are mostly pretty sharp people. You're just not going to survive in this industry if you're not. So we have a lot of people that are analyzing in a real detailed way their specific business, because everyone has different factors, right? So the point I wanted to make with that point in that article was, look at your top line, look at your bottom line, and then look at everything that is making that bottom line less than your top line, right? And then get creative on where in my specific business model can I improve things. If I'm making money on components, well, son of a gun, I'm gonna have a real close relationship with my nutritionist, right? Are we getting all those components that we can get? If I'm making money mainly on pounds, let's go after those pounds. Let's really look at the harvest, certainly nutrition, but let's look at the harvest, right? If I've really gotten really wise and started to look at the lactations that I have on my dairy, and they're really young, and I want some, you know, a few more lact 3s and 4s and 5s, well, how do we get there? You know, part of that is going to be in your parlor and how well that udder can handle all that vacuum that she's going to experience, you know, over those lactations. So, and udder health products as well, you know. What touches that cow is a big deal, you know, and so you can think about those things. You know, that gets into my world a lot. You know, the liners matter, vacuum and pulsation matter, pre and post dips matter, you know, your stalls, the cleanliness and the quality of your bedding matters, you know. So if you can really look at those things instead of just, you know, we generally think of, oh, he's got a bunch of cows, he's selling a bunch of milk. Well, the neighbor who's milking fewer may be making more money, right? Or have a, you know, a heftier bottom line than you, because they've analyzed some of these other details. But that's only the point I'm trying to make, is if a guy can sit still long enough, and so many of these dairymen are pulled in so many directions, I really just don't think they have the time sometimes to step back and say, I'm not looking at my phone. I'm going to let my secretary or my highest level manager hold my phone for the day, and I'm going to start analyzing. I'm going to do that once every 2 weeks. I'm going to do that once a month. I'm going to go out on a date with my wife, and I'm going to talk about this type of stuff, or whoever has input into your business. But that's the tip of the spear, as I look at this industry. It's leadership, leading your employees from one point, from one viewpoint. But the other is also leading yourself, and what kind of businessman are you? And just because we live with this revolving money from banks does not mean that we're going to be profitable, or we're going to allow our kids to be profitable, right? So you've got to look at some of these details. And just for, in my world, it's parlor efficiency, it's udder health, it's employee compliance, it's that kind of stuff. That's what I focus on. But in the big picture, you know, you can extrapolate these ideas to your whole business, is what I'm saying.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we, you know, we've had a few other guests on our podcast that we've had that similar kind of conversation of, you know, it's no different than, you know, treat this like you're going to treat any business. I mean, just because 100%. It involves animals and people, and, you know, we tend to see, and you probably see it more, Jason, sometimes my best cow people aren't necessarily my best business people, and vice versa, you know. And so, yes. let's work at getting better on both sides of that coin, and it's only going to make us all better. And so we're kind of wrapping up here. Any last word, Jason? Anything we didn't hit on, or anything you'd like to say, just in relation to anything on this topic?
Yeah, here's the thing I'd throw out there is, every time you're met with a doom and gloom or a stressful input or influence from the TV or from the industry or from your milk check, immediately take that and turn it into, what can I do? You know, there's a real tendency to just to get into these negative mental states. And if you've chosen to be in this industry, man, you got to be a warrior, and you got to think like a warrior, right? So, wow, that really stung. $14 milk, are you insane? That's crazy. It's cost me $19 to make this stuff, right? So immediately you take that and you say, I'm going to look at my numbers, and what can I do better? Where are some areas that I haven't thought of before that I can do better? So I'm big on that. Whenever I talk to someone, I want them to come away encouraged, hopeful, looking towards the future. People aren't going to stop eating ice cream, eating tacos, eating pizza, drinking milk. I'm not going to stop.
I can tell you that.
Right. So this industry is going to be around. If you want to be in this industry, you can be in this industry. You just got to look at some of this stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thanks, Jason. Last thing from you is, somebody was intrigued by maybe some of the products you guys offer or just some of your advice. What's the best way for someone to get a hold of you?
Yeah, you can just Google IBA Inc. easy. That'll pop right up. I think it's the first response from Google. So it's IBA Incorporated. We have distributors all around the United States. I live in Wisconsin, but I consult all around the United States. If you are a producer that's buying a significant quantity of product from IBA, your local IBA distributor, I'm available to you. I can come to your dairy and do some analysis and some employee training and parlor efficiency type stuff. But yeah, just Google IBA, it'll pop right up. Or if you're in a big dairy area, there's certainly an IBA distributor in your area.
Excellent, excellent. Well, thank you, Jason. I do recommend everybody to go out and I don't think it was in the most recent Progressive. I think it's the one before that. But either way, I think if you probably just Google the main aspects of this, you'll probably be able to find the article. Definitely want to encourage you to do that. It's a great article, and take a few minutes to read that. But with that, Jason, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it. Hope you can come back sometime.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. So with that, guys, we're going to sign off here. Make sure and subscribe to the podcast. Also, check out some of our other social media. You go to seedcorn.com or robseco.com, our parent company. You can check out our LinkedIn. You can check out YouTube with some video content coming soon regarding our forage summits that we just did not too long ago, hopefully. So just a lot of fun stuff and a lot of good content coming forward as well. And so with that, we'll sign off. I hope everyone has a great day and happy planting.